I will call the meeting to order of today's Telecommunication Regulation Infrastructure Division. And we're going to start off, since we do have a quorum, approving the minutes. Representative Morrow, would you be willing to...
approval of the minutes.
Representative Morrow moves approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Let me just talk a little bit today, members and those in the audience, about what the agenda is. We're going to continue testimony on House File 2351. We're going to move this bill today. Once I get done with my preliminary comments, I'm going to move it to Labor and Commerce without recommendation. But let me just say a few comments before that. In the interim, there's going to be a working group or two to look at some of the major issues that are involved in the state franchising bill, such as franchise fees, paid support, build out, consumer protection, and so forth. And if you want to be a part of that, you should contact Committee Administrator Elizabeth Emerson here. So again, there is going to be some discussion about some of these issues. What exact format that's going to take hasn't been decided yet, but there will be some opportunity to meet to talk about these issues and see if we can move forward on some of these things. So again, contact Committee Administrator Elizabeth Emerson here if you're interested in being a part of that. I also plan on having another committee hearing, hopefully in the near future here, from someone who's connected with the FCC to talk about their ruling on video franchising. I'd like to get some expert testimony to talk about the impact, the implications on the state level of this, the national debate that's going on, and what that means here in Minnesota of the recent FCC ruling. So we're going to work to get that set up in the next few weeks or month to have the opportunity to hear about that. And once that's set, and if other people wish to testify as the expert, whoever that may be, provides information, would be more than willing to do so as well. So that's the plan in the near future here. Again, we're going to hear testimony from several folks. We're going to try to end today's meeting somewhere around 10 or so, and so that will kind of give you some idea of those who are testifying. If you can keep your testimony, that may be 15 minutes or so. And anytime you can provide written testimony of what you said on before us here, it's also very much appreciated. So, members, do you have any questions at this time about anything before? What I'm going to do is move the bill forward, and I'll do that at this time. I'm going to move the bill, House File 2351, be recommended to pass without recommendation, back to Labor and Commerce. And after the first year, again, we'll be taking this bill back in this committee to continue working on it. So with that, I am going to ask that our testifiers begin presenting their information. I guess we'll start with Mr. Knickerbocker. I got to see you on the list here. Did you want to step forward and present your point of view? Well, welcome, Mr. Knickerbocker, to identify yourself for the record and move forward.
Chairman, members, thank you. My name is Jerry Knickerbocker. I'm here this morning on behalf of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, which is a trade group for the local telephone companies in the state of Minnesota. We represent over 90 members providing local telecom services in the state. I'd like to go back and try to capture a few of the things that were talked about a few weeks ago when this bill was heard for the very first time, and try to address why we need House File 2351. And then maybe make a couple of comments at the end of my statement about the FCC order and the kind of things that, Mr. Chairman, you already touched on, that the committee is going to have to weigh and kind of consider where possible conflicts exist with state law and with the FCC order. Competition for cable or video is limited in Minnesota. There are 853 cities and 1,790 townships in Minnesota that have the statutory authority to grant cable franchises. As we heard previous testifiers, I think it was Mr. Luter or the League, at the present time there's only about 40 cities out of the 853 that have competitive cable service. That's about 4%. But why are the rest of the Minnesotans being denied competition? We'll take the position that Minnesota has an outdated cable law, Chapter 238, that stands as a barrier to entry and prevents competition from happening. That law, originally written in 1973, requires cities to impose on a new entrant terms that are neither more favorable nor less burdensome than those of the incumbent provider. Well, the law has worked, and it's worked well. It's protected the cable industry so well that, in fact, 34 years later, only 4% of the cities in Minnesota have cable competition. Is 34 years enough? House File 2351 is good for consumers. As we heard in previous comments, this bill was heard a couple of weeks ago, FCC has got statistics out saying that cable rates have gone up over 90% in the past 10 years. That's three times the rate of inflation. Competition is really going to be the only check on cable rates. The FCC reports where market-based wireline competition exists, there is a difference. The reports are that cable rates are 15 to 41% lower, and the price per channel is 27% lower where competition exists. Cable hasn't had to compete in Minnesota. Cable's been free to raise rates, and there isn't much the consumer can do about it. There's little competition, and it shows in the rates. Competition drives prices closer to cost, and we'd say that that means lower prices and better services. Customers are forced to buy the packages that the cable monopoly offers. You get new features and products when they are ready to provide them at the price they demand. Cable doesn't want to have consumers to have choices. They want to keep the monopoly cable service they offer as the only option. Given choices, customers will decide in the end, and they should, what package of goods and services provides them with the best value. Not granting cities the authority to negotiate over the area to be served denies video services to Minnesota. Without a change in the state's cable law, the do-nothing position advocated assures that the cable monopoly will never face competition. The 1973 law they cling to assures that the competitors in 2007 would be saddled with millions of dollars in additional expenses just to enter the market. This has been the strategy for stopping competition. With the aid of the law and some willing cable administrators, cable has just had a strategy of stopping competition by making the requirements so costly that new entrants can't justify going to market. As a means to create some competition in video services, telcos, or the new entrants, should be allowed to pursue a phased-out, rollout approach to offering video services. Cable companies want cities to force telcos to a full rollout of video service to all parts of the community, rather than phasing it in over time. Well, cable companies neglect to tell you that their current service areas were built in stages, the very approach they now say should be denied to others. Remember, the incumbent cable providers were originally given a monopoly. They had 100% of the market to start with. Deployment isn't a matter of race or income. Typical installation of new kinds of lines are started in the densest population areas where the greatest number of people can be reached most cost effectively. Many areas with dense population have high concentration of minority residents, while more affluent areas are more sprawled out and have the tendency to receive services later rather than sooner. All technology deployments are done in stages. That's the way cable begin deploying their service. And that's exactly the same way cable companies are now deploying telephone services in stages. Senate, our House File 2351 is also a vehicle, and this is really important for those of you on this committee who are interested in broadband deployment and making sure that there's more opportunities to create jobs and growth in outstate Minnesota, realizing that advanced services and broadband is one way to do it. So if you're for making sure that we do everything that this legislature can to encourage broadband deployment, you have to be for House File 2351. 2351 can help make economic development and more broadband deployment possible in rural Minnesota. We have to change the state's outdated cable law. Broadband deployment and advanced services are the benefits of creating competition for incumbent cable service providers. New entrants have to provide a platform in the terms of offering video services that is the vehicle for providing advanced broadband services. And part of the reason that it becomes more cost-effective, if you as an incumbent telco, for instance, can now offer video along with your other service offerings, the data and voice, you've got one more service that you can offer, but by virtue of the fact that you have to build that platform to provide the video, you now have created a platform that I can now offer advanced broadband services from. So this is an important bill for rural Minnesota in that aspect. And I'd ask members not to lose sight of that. Many small business owners in parts of Minnesota don't have the access that they'd like to broadband or advanced telecommunication services. They just don't have the choices. This is a tool to make advanced broadband deployment a possibility in more parts of the state of Minnesota quicker than any other provision, you know, that we're talking about, or any other way in which other pieces of legislation are maybe being discussed. This is the way to do it quicker than any other vehicle that's presently being considered by the Minnesota legislature. Broadband's a real benefit. It's a service that opens the door to opportunity like no other technology. And the broadband connection, you know, puts the world at the door. Creating competition in video services also stimulates investment, creates jobs, and it spurs economic growth. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce estimates the economy gains $3 for every dollar spent by the telecommunication industry. Competition is good news for cities. It's a win-win. Community leaders get a chance to equip their cities with enabling new technologies. Competitor brings exciting next-generation technology capabilities, in addition to paying franchise fees, providing PEG access as well. House File 2351 is a balanced approach to making sure that change happens in the cable industry, or the providing of video, if you want to characterize it that way. Now let's step back for just a second. Neither telephone or cable or any other communication service today is a monopoly anymore. They all compete with one another, but also they compete with satellite, the internet, Wi-Fi, WiMAX, internet protocol, voice over internet protocol, new platforms, new technologies, and things that, you know, we don't even imagine that are still out there on the horizon. The level of regulation that was once considered appropriate when there were monopolies no longer exists. Now, it's easy for cable companies and others that offer high-speed internet services to get into the voice market, but it's really hard for telephone companies to enter the video market. The ease of entry of voice today is due to voice over IP technology, and with the convergence of multiple communication technologies, everyone was expecting that competition would happen in the video market, but it didn't happen, and not very quickly. That's because the change that we need to make these technological advances available in the video market and competition weren't based on technology. The technology is there, but the roadblocks were the outdated cable franchising laws and regulations that were written for another time and another type of technology. Now, you've heard some people testify on this particular bill in the past couple of weeks. They basically said, well, ignore technology. You know, don't change the 1973 law. Cities can't be trusted to make decisions that are in their best interest. We ought to follow, you know, the letter of Chapter 238. Minnesota doesn't need video competition or more broadband deployment. In effect, Minnesota legislators do nothing. Well, to do nothing is the cable companies want, or the people that say we don't need to have any action in this area or activity or changes, is no more than a plea for government to help them stave off competition. It should be rejected. Doing nothing is not good for Minnesotans. In the context, Mr. Chairman, of we have a bill that makes some changes. We also have an FCC order that, you know, this bill doesn't address. And you as a subcommittee or the Commerce Committee in general are going to have to weigh some issues both with what's being proposed and, you know, the terms of the FCC order. So maybe I could just spend a couple of minutes trying to put a couple of things, I think, in context, because I think it reflects on the bill that's been introduced. The FCC, you know, took a look at what was going on around the country. There's not been competition in the video markets as anticipated when the passage of the 1996 Act occurred. And the reason or reasons in terms of the FCC's decision and the comments that were filed indicated that there's difficulty getting into the market. And the requirements that local franchising authorities ask for is an additional barrier to getting into the market. So in effect what the FCC did was, and I'll characterize it this way, was to take cable companies and local franchising authorities, or cities, to the telecom woodshed. They said, well, we've got to do something about getting more competition into video, and you know, we're going to promulgate an order and some rules as to make this happen. Well, one of the first things that is in this FCC order that I think all of the new entrants, or people who would like to be new entrants, like, is a 90-day requirement that a decision be made and a franchise be granted. I mean, it basically sets some time out there, and that's helpful. There's no question about that. It sets a timetable for decisions to be made. If you're in the business or if you're already in the right-of-way, you've got one set of timetable. If you're not, there's a longer period of time. I think there's something here that the committee is going to have to look at. One of the things that's happening around the United States is a fair number, a dozen or so, 15 now, different states have gone to a statewide system of franchising rather than doing it on a community-by-community basis. And I think that's one of the things that you're going to have to weigh. The FCC, you know, has laid out some timetables for making decisions and some things that you or whoever the local franchising authority has to take into consideration when they look at an applicant, but it doesn't address, you know, the vehicle by which necessarily decision to grant the franchise is made. But other states are going to a statewide franchising system. The bar has been raised from the last time we talked about this, members. Wisconsin is holding hearings on the same concept as we speak. Iowa is. The Iowa Senate has passed a statewide franchising bill. The bill's gone to the House. Georgia and Missouri just this past month did exactly the same thing. The point is that there's a movement nationally away from individual cities or franchising authorities granting franchise to competitors, and there's like one-stop shopping with some sort of a state entity, statewide franchising, now being the new norm. The other thing that I wanted to mention about the FCC order, I think the FCC order makes clear that the local franchising authority, whatever it happens to be, can't require, you know, a universal build-out as a condition of getting a franchise. And that's different than, you know, what we've been operating under here in the state of Minnesota in terms of how people have been asked to interpret Chapter 238. I think that's one of the things that your subcommittee is going to have to take a look at is these build-out requirements that people said we had to do, had to follow, are in conflict, or at least potentially conflict with Chapter 238, and how are you going to make, you know, the adjustment here? The same thing is true for franchise fees. The FCC order picks some things and says these got to be counted against the 5% franchise fee that a municipality gets. Others say other things are cited in the order that don't count. But then it kind of, you know, uses words like operational, capital, construction cost limit, but there's no definition. So someone, Minnesota legislator, is going to have to sort that out as to what kind of things might now constitute the, under a 5% franchise fee, a revenue cap. And I think because the FCC didn't define some of these kind of terms and conditions, you've got your right for disagreements and lawsuits and people arguing that, well, you can't put this in, you can't put that in. Now, one of the things that we're trying to keep in mind, you know, Mr. Luders was here a couple of weeks ago on behalf of MACTA. There are a number of cities that have got special kind of considerations or things in the franchise agreement negotiated out with a provider that may or may not be impacted by the FCC order. So you're going to have to kind of weigh, well, how do people deal with this going forward? Obviously, if a contract is renewed, you know, you've got an opportunity to kind of renegotiate those kind of items. But I just want to bring to members' attention the fact that there may be all sorts of cities out there that have got things that now they have in their contracts in terms of the 5% franchise fee or providing of special goods and services to the city that may be in jeopardy because of the FCC order. And I think, you know, a couple of subcommittee meetings on that topic alone are going to be necessary for the subcommittee over the course of the summer and fall. The FCC order was kind of definite about a few things. I mean, they basically said you don't have to duplicate the PIGS offerings, or you don't have to, or can't, I should say, is a better word. You can't regulate or assess franchise fees on internet access or broadband data, non-cable related services. I'm not sure if members have got circumstances where some of these things are going to be part of the discussion because they were part of somebody's contract that they negotiated with a cable provider. But again, those are kind of questions that, you know, members of the subcommittee are going to have to ask those people who are interested in testifying or being on this work groups, Mr. Chairman. The other thing that I'll mention, in keeping with this context of the discussion about the FCC order, the FCC didn't strike down any state laws as it relates to, you know, local level franchise provisions, which I've characterized as our Chapter 238. They did strike down, however, anything that was a local provision that required a level playing field. Those have been preempted. And again, I think this sets up some potential conflicts with what people have done with the FCC order, either in whole or in part, because many of the local franchising authorities, you know, basically have told our members over time, you know, well, we're following Chapter 238, and it says we got to do, you know, less favorable, more restrictive, those kind of covenants, that we have to give you the same thing that the incumbent has. That no longer is true. I think that's one of the outcomes of the FCC order, but again, there's going to have to be a sorting out on the part of the subcommittee over those particular points. Well, the committee, you know, you're being asked to make some significant changes. You have to factor in the FCC order. The thing that I want to kind of mention in closing to members is that, you know, the FCC is in charge of video, and they regulate video, but the fact that there hasn't been competition to the degree that everyone would like to see in video provisions. You know, the barriers to entry are there. Minnesota is not unique. Neither is the other parts of the United States. Our members have experienced some of the same problems that people have in other parts of the country in terms of barriers to entry and cost requirements, the requests for money, for contributions, the delays. So this is an issue that is timely. I think the point that needs to be made as we kind of take a step back and look at the issue, you know, you've had some people who basically have come before the committee and told about their experiences. You're basically saying, well, you know, we've got this and we'd like to keep it. You know, this bill doesn't address taking things away from people in that sense, but you know, have to go past the plea not to change anything. And I think that's the message, you know, that some people have tried to leave so far is, well, nothing's wrong. You know, why do we have to fix anything? Nothing's broken. Stuff works. No, it doesn't. And change is happening. It will continue to happen. It's happening on the national level. It's happening all around us. Technology is driving change. That's not going away. But some of the people who have a vested interest in the status quo will ask you not to change. They don't want you to recognize that technology has leapfrogged outdated regulations. They want you to do nothing. Well, doing nothing, as I said before, is a plea by those who have a vested interest in the status quo, the monopolists, for government to help them fight off any kind of competition. Doing nothing allows everyone to hide behind Minnesota's outdated, you know, cable law. Doing nothing is not good for Minnesota. You know, competition is good for consumers. There are market forces out there that are waiting to work to benefit consumers. Minnesotans deserve more competition in video. House File 2351 is a modest step towards making that happen.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Knickerbocker. Any questions, comments from legislators? Representative Mason?
Thank you, Chair. I have two questions, and the first one, are you aware of any instances where any of the people that you are representing have tried to apply and been refused?
Mr. Knickerbocker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mazin, yes.
Okay. And?
When you say refused, you know, we need to qualify that because there are different ways to be turned down. Someone can ask for outrageous terms and conditions, like asking for $1 million up front. Others can put all kinds of terms and conditions on that are so onerous you can't meet it, either financially or in other ways with the timetable and so forth. So there is no franchise granted, but there's no franchise refused. It's just that you can't meet, you know, the terms and conditions that are set up. So the answer to your question is yes, it has happened. Does happen in Minnesota, just like other states.
Okay. And
Representative Mason.
Okay, and sometime I guess I'd like to get some background on some of those instances. And the other one was when you're talking about working in stages as a new entrant. Are you talking about if you come into a community where there's already existing infrastructure, you would still have to do stages, or are you just talking in a totally new environment where you'd have to work in stages?
Mr. Nickerbocker?
It could be either. If you were a telephone company, for instance, that had a service area, you you're already providing telephone service in it, you could overbuild that area, but you might want to go to the rural parts or the townships next door. You would want to do that in a different time frame than what you could easily do where the population, the concentration, the density is, and where you already have some facilities. So it wouldn't always be in stages, but in truth, it probably would. Because, again, in some places, like if you were going to a brand new community that you had no phone presence in, so to speak, you would need to do it in stages because you have no customers. You know, you're starting from scratch. So the logic is you start in the most dense area and work on out.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Knickerbocker. We'll move on to our Next testifier, Juanita Brown, did you want to come up to the table? Welcome, Ms. Brown. If you want to, again, identify yourself and who you represent.
Good morning, Chairman Johnson and members of the committee. My name is Juanita Brown, and I'm the Regional Vice President for Legislative and Regulatory Affairs for AT&T. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you all again today on the important topic of video franchise reform. AT&T generally supports legislation which brings consumers more choices in the video entertainment market. Over a dozen states have passed video franchise reform bills to give consumers new choices beyond those that have been offered by traditional monopoly cable providers. These states have seen increased investment in new technologies and, in many cases, lower prices and better product offerings. Unfortunately, I must testify today in opposition to House Bill 2351. As I indicated previously, a few weeks ago when I appeared before all of you, AT&T considers many key components necessary in good video franchise reform. Among those is a streamlined statewide application process that would be uniform and predictable for all parties interested in offering video in the state. Lengthy and costly applications have a chilling effect on potential investment. A fair franchise fee needs to be established that is based on a rational definition of gross revenues derived from video programming services. Cities should retain their traditional oversight of the local rights of way as well. The bill should also encourage flexible solutions to deliver community access and public safety information. A bill should not contain any build-out requirements. Competition should be allowed to flourish as mandatory or even minimal build-out requirements have been found to be some of the strongest barriers to market entry. There should be a prohibition against redlining, which this bill does do, which would not allow providers to discriminate on income, racial, or ethnic characteristics. After reviewing House File 2351, we do have a number of concerns that we still do need to be addressed, and I'm just going to mention a few of them this morning because we look forward to working with the committee over the interim to talk about the bill in more detail. The main concerns that we have with the bill are, first, the application process. The goal of any statewide video franchise reform is to bring more competition to consumers as quickly as possible. This requires a change in public policy to streamline, facilitate, and speed the franchise approval process in order to encourage new entrants into the market. Subjecting competitors to CLEC-type applications, as is described in House File 2351, will only serve as a deterrent to potential providers because it is simply more regulation than is necessary. Video and entertainment offerings are not lifeline services that require such scrutiny prior to entry. A person seeking to open a new movie theater in the state would not be subject to a lengthy approval application process, and neither should potential video providers. The experiences that we have seen in other states strongly support an approach for minimal regulation in this area. Competition in the market and not the oversight of regulators is the best check on new entrants in a competitive market. The Commission's authority should rest with the granting of the certificate of franchise only. It should not be given discretion in approving an application. It should just really be approving that application to ensure that the information that you have decided in the legislation is necessary to be provided from the new entrant. The next area of concern that we have is in the area of the definition of gross revenues. While we do not oppose that new entrants should pay a franchise fee to each city in which they operate, this bill does not have a clear definition of gross revenues to form the basis of that payment. The current bill instead vaguely applies to all revenue derived directly or indirectly in connection with video service. This vague definition that is currently in the bill would remove one of the benefits of a state-issued franchise. And that benefit is, under a state-issued franchise, each entrant would know upfront its costs and requirements once it receives its franchise. Other states have developed well-definitional concepts of gross revenues in their video franchise reform legislation. We would encourage the committee to look at the concepts that other states have adopted in looking for ways to have a fair and rational way of assessing franchise fees. The last area that I'm going to talk to you about this morning in the bill that we have concerns about is the advertising requirement that is contained in this bill. No other state legislation imposes a requirement that 10% of its advertising space be reserved for competitors' ads, and it's simply not consistent with a competitive market. Broadcast channels and cable networks are not required to show promotions for other programs. What this bill really says is, if you're NBC, you have to leave 10% of your advertising space so that ABC and CBS can advertise their programs, their shows on your network. This simply is inappropriate. Forcing video providers to reserve such an enormous block of space will significantly impair the operational and financial abilities of companies. We're just not aware of any comparable limitations in Minnesota law requiring other media providers such as radio, newspapers, magazines, and the like to reserve advertising space for competitors, and we don't believe that's appropriate. You had asked Chairman Johnson about the FCC order, and I really didn't come today prepared to talk in detail about that. But one thing I wanted to share with the committee as you think about the FCC's order. I think the FCC's order provides instruction on how you may want to look at what is necessary in the state. However, the FCC order applies to cable providers. Those that are looking to enter the video market are not cable providers under the federal law. We are IPTV providers, Internet Protocol TV providers, which is defined differently under the federal law. So while certainly there's good instruction in that order does not apply to IPTV providers, and therefore it is necessary to look at having a law in this state if you want new entrants into the market. In closing today, I really do regret that I couldn't come here today and fully support the bill that is before your committee. I would like to thank you for all of you showing an interest in video franchise reform, because I think all of us recognize the tremendous benefits that can happen for Minnesotans if franchise reform is adopted in this state. We look forward to working with the committee over the interim to address the issues I've talked about today and other minor issues that are in the bill. And we look forward to the day when consumers here in Minnesota can benefit from the lower products, lower prices, better products, and expanded broadband availability that such a bill would bring. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today. And if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Brown. I have a couple questions for you. One, is there a state that you'd point to then as having a model state franchising bill?
I think there are many across the country. I personally have worked in Kansas. I worked on the Kansas bill, and I have just recently come back from Iowa, spending a couple weeks in negotiations there. Both of those bills are very good models. The ALEC bill that was adopted by the ALEC is also a good model to look at. But I do believe that Kansas, Iowa, those are two good examples of bills that are good to look at for model language.
And could you clarify for me, what is the role of AT&T in the Minnesota video market? Would you be entering the market? Are you here testifying in terms of a general national perspective on how video franchising should occur? Can you just say a little bit about what AT&T's role is?
My role here in Minnesota, really in today's market, is on a more general basis. We are very concerned about video reform as it is rolled out across the country. We believe that it is an important policy decision in every state, and we are hopeful that as technology progresses, that we someday may be able to provide video services nationwide. Today we have those capabilities where we are the in-region local service provider, and we have entered many markets. Someday, hopefully, we will be able to come to Minnesota, and so our focus here is just to ensure that if a bill is passed in Minnesota, that is a bill that if we have the capability to enter, that it is such that we will be able to enter.
All right, thank you for testifying. Any other questions from members? If not, we'll move on to our next testifier. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. And again, if you would identify yourself for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman and members. I'm Jeff Leaders, President of the Minnesota Association of Community Telecommunications Administrators and Cable Coordinator for the City of Lakeville. And as I said on March 16th, now for the rest of the story. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of MACTA and the Minnesota Association of Community Telecommunications Administrators and the state chapter of the National Association of Telecommunications Officers and Advisors, an affiliate of the League of Minnesota Cities. We oppose preemption of local franchise authority over video providers by the state government. Cities and cable commissions have spent 25 years developing expertise in protecting and managing our local rights of way, looking out for customer service and consumer protection, and creating some of the strongest and most creative and cost-effective community networks and PEG programming in the country. We support and encourage competition for our residents and have proven so by working with about 50 competing operators in the state to grant franchises over the past couple of years. To date, neither AT&T nor Qwest have approached any city in Minnesota to apply for a franchise. We ask, why should the state usurp our authority and create a new, inexperienced division that operates at a greater distance from its citizens at a more expensive cost, just because two or three corporations are asking for a break from regulation and requirements that are appropriate? These companies have not made a case for why the system needs to change. They have not presented any evidence that the system can't work well for them now. In fact, they have refused to honor the current rules. Meanwhile, other companies have observed the rules in 50 communities, having been granted franchises, and are providing competition in their communities. And I highlight just a few. Belcom Incorporated is now providing competitive service in New Prague. Hickory Tech is providing competitive service in Faribault. Lakedale Telephone is providing competitive service in Painesville, Maple Lake, and Montrose, as well as other cities, Bemidji, Grand Rapids, La Prairie, Otsego, Rosemount. All these communities, and just recently in Mankato and North Mankato. So as you can see, the technology continues to flourish. It continues to change, as Mr. Knickerbocker stated, but is now moving out beyond the initial boundaries of where it began. Of the 853 Minnesota cities that Mr. Knickerbocker referred to, less than 600 have cable franchises, many of which are very small communities that have that do not have cable franchises. To summarize our points from our March 16th testimony, there is no need for this legislation. Qwest has publicly stated in the media to its shareholders and in front of this committee that they do not plan to invest in upgrading their infrastructure to offer video services over their networks anytime soon. AT&T also stated in front of this committee that they will not be offering video in Minnesota anytime soon. Reports from our counterparts around the country indicate that AT&T's technology is in question regarding video services. The company is slowing down its investment in that technology, and in other states where AT&T is pushing that technology, communities are very concerned about the woefully inadequate plans for meeting PEG obligations. We are told that transmission standards are unacceptable and place extreme undue burdens on cities. This is important as Qwest is on record stating that they are carefully studying using the same architecture to provide their services when and if they roll them out here in Minnesota. Competitive franchises are being successfully granted in Minnesota, as I alluded to. In fact, we should point out a basic fact that many people do not understand. Current cable franchises in Minnesota are not and have never been exclusive. In the year 2000, Wide Open West and Everest Communications came to the state, and they began negotiating with many communities. The unfortunate situation took place when the market crashed, the venture capital dried up and went away, and Wide Open West and Everest pulled back their rollout plans and their overbuild plans. Cities across the state want competition. They encourage competition, but they want fair, safe, and competition that serves our residents, all our residents. Qwest and AT&T have not applied for franchise in Minnesota. Franchise authority must remain at the local level because of quick response and consumer safety. The further you remove those things from the local level, the more dangerous and the less responsive it is. Broadband deployment must include all communities and all neighborhoods within a community. We are here to debunk the myth that Minnesota must pass a statewide franchising bill to keep up with the rest of the nation. Since our testimony on March 16th, even more states now have refused industry requests to consider statewide franchising legislation. And we believe, along with many national organizations, that the FCC stepped beyond their powers given to them by Congress in the December 20th rulemaking, and that will now be heard in the Sixth Circuit of federal court. Minnesota has a uniquely strong tradition of local community television and community networking, and that must be preserved and protected. Three of the most obvious legal problems and concerns we have with the Qwest bill include the build-out requirement. The Cable Act at 47 U.S.C. 552A specifically provides that a franchising authority may establish and enforce construction schedules and other construction-related requirements, including construction-related performance requirements of the cable operator. Under Minnesota Statute 238.084M, cable service must be provided throughout a community within a five-year period. House File 2351, however, would not permit local units of government or the PUC to establish any required service areas or construction schedules. House File 2351 does not prescribe any build-out criteria for companies seeking to provide video services in the state. Under the proposed new Section 238.50 Subdivision 5, a company could expand its service area from community to community by providing 20 days written notice to the PUC. However, nothing in 2351 would require the company to provide service to any particular portion of a community. A company could simply pick and choose those subscribers which meet its business plan. House File 2351 contains a section 238.56 which prohibits redlining in a manner generally consistent with federal law. However, it provides no clarification how a community or a group of residents would challenge a company for failure to provide service to a given portion of a community. Would a redlining complaint go to the district court or the PUC? How does one prove up a redlining case when there is no mandate for service to be provided to any given portion of a community? If a telephone company provides video service only to the north side of a community where the high-value homes are located, would this constitute a violation of the anti-redlining prohibition? The second most obvious legal problem we have a concern with is the public educational and governmental programming portion of the bill. House File 2351 requires a video service provider to match the same number of PEG programming channels provided by the incumbent cable operator. However, it is the municipality's obligation to transmit such programming to the video service provider. The first question is, how does a municipality transmit the programming? If a video service provider serves 10 communities in a given region and its main head-end facility is located 30 miles from a given community, does that mean it is the municipality's obligation to pay for a transmission line to transmit local city council meetings from City Hall to the head-end location? The cost associated with this transmission obligation could vary widely based solely on the design chosen by the video provider over which the municipality has no control. In addition, the transmission must be completed in a manner or form that the video service provider is capable of accepting and transmitting over its network. Thus, if a video service provider is using one type of technology and the incumbent cable operator is using an alternative type of technology, the burden falls on the municipality to purchase equipment to facilitate reception for the providers. In many cases, this may mean that smaller jurisdictions with limited resources will no longer be able to cablecast local governmental meetings and educational programming to its constituents, many of whom have become accustomed to this form of communication over the past two decades. This will result in significant impact on elderly and homebound residents who may be otherwise unable to attend governmental and educational meetings of interest to the community. House File 2351, Section 238.52 also requires that the video service provider match the local peg fee which may be required of the incumbent cable operator. However, this language fails to address the complexity of the issue, which varies from community to community around the state. Not all communities have an easily calculated monthly peg fee that can be assessed proportionally between competing operators. In some cases, substantial institutional networks have been constructed by the incumbent cable operator to facilitate the distribution of local peg programming. Should the new video service provider simply be permitted to interconnect to the institutional network with no additional obligation to pay for its ongoing maintenance and technical improvements? In other cases, the incumbent cable operator may actually provide a certain level of local peg programming by operating a local studio with personnel employed by the incumbent operator. Should the video service provider be required to contribute towards these efforts or simply be permitted to interconnect and obtain the benefits without any of the ongoing financial burdens? And lastly, but not least, is the right-of-way authority. Noticeably absent from the requirements of House File 2351 is any language that verifies that local governments retain authority to regulate and control access to local right-of-ways. The implication of House File 2351 is that the PUC will authorize a video service provider to provide video services in a community and that any local requirements which may impede or restrict that state authority may not be enforceable. Municipalities cannot be put in a position to have companies undertaking unregulated activities in the city's rights of way, which may adversely impact utilities providing essential services. Minnesota Statute 238, as currently drafted, respects local government's authority over public rights of way, and any legislation regarding the provision of video services in the state should include similar protections. Minneapolis and St. Paul have jointly passed legislative priorities for this session and retaining local franchising authority, preserving PEG and compensation for rights of way fell into their top five priorities, along with housing, transportation, local aid, and education. Cities across the state are in unison on this. It's not an urban versus rural, a small versus large, etc. We have the League of Minnesota Cities, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association, and many others that are all very concerned. In conclusion, rather than spending this summer deregulating Quest, we'd like to spend the next 9 months issuing franchises. By next January session, Quest and other competitors could be up and operating some communities of their choosing. We respectfully request to be included in any discussions that are scheduled by this committee over the summer. However, if the premise is to usurp local authority and move control of local rights of way and other local issues from the city jurisdiction up to a state paradigm, we will continue to oppose this premise. Thank you. I can stand for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions from Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't need the answer to this question now. And Jeff, you didn't give out this handout, but the League of Minnesota Cities, I hand out a list of cities with competitive cable service, and you don't happen to know who the second provider is in Rosemont, do you?
Evermore development, the FTTH, they have their own fiber to the home system, where they bring in their own video signals and data and phone.
So you did know. Wow. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
In our backyard.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Leader, in that Rosemount situation, I know that was subject to one we discussed quite a bit last year. Is that subject to the build-out for the entire multi-city cable commission or just the city of Rosemount?
Mr. Leader?
Yes, Chair Johnson and Representative. As I understand it, it's a total city build-out requirement over a period of time, and to my understanding, that has not been fulfilled to this point.
Okay.
I have a whole series of questions along this line, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Leader, was it the same build-out that the incumbent carrier was required to match? Was it longer? Was it shorter? Did it meet that five-year requirement in federal law? Do you recall?
To my recollection, and I could stand down to Dr. Carlson from Charter Communications was part of the negotiations with the city of Rosemount, as they are the incumbent cable operator. I believe it's a seven-year build-out, isn't it?
Correct. Beth, you'd identify yourself for the record, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, my name is Tucker Carlson. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Nebraska and Minnesota for Charter Communications. Mm-hmm. I was part of the negotiation with the city of Rosemount. Charter was granted a franchise in approximately 1999 to the city of Rosemount. The franchise requirement was to upgrade the plant to a 750 or better megahertz system with a hybrid fiber coax architecture. We had 18 months to build it out as part of the franchise. The build-out was completed in a much shorter time. When FTTH came and applied to the city back in 2002, they first sought a limited area franchise strictly for the Evermore development. That was not granted to by the city, but the city did give FTTH over 6 years as part of the franchise language to build out. FTTH to this point has not built outside of the Evermore development.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, that's one of the questions I'd like us to explore a little bit this morning, probably for Mr. Leader. You gave them a different term than you gave Charter, apparently. And first of all, it's still not clear whether or not FTTH has to fulfill the entire obligation, because I believe Rosemount is part of a multi-city consortium down there, if I'm not mistaken. Does Charter fulfill the Apple Valley, Rosemount, and I think portions of Farmington area, if I recall that correctly?
Yeah,
does FTTH have to match that whole thing, or we allow them to break out individual cities?
Let me just respond to one thing. First of all, I'm the cable coordinator for the city of Lakeville. Mark Moore is the cable coordinator for Apple Valley, Rosemount, and Farmington. Okay. So the intimate details of their agreement, Mark Moore would be the one that would have to address those, or their cable attorney. Let's see how I can adequately respond to that. From what I understand, and I probably can't go a whole lot further on this because, you're getting into some intimate details of that agreement. But each of those cities, although they're part of a joint powers, they're not part of a joint powers agreement. They're a cable consortium. They each handle their franchise agreements independently. So they have a cable coordinator that is shared amongst the three cities. Mm-hmm. They try to mirror their agreements so that they're easily adopted by all three. But in this case, Evermore, FTTH, they only wanted to build in that development. So they came in and they asked for a franchise agreement for that development. And there was some discussion about the fact that 238 doesn't allow for a franchise agreement just for one development. So then they agreed over, some negotiations to build out over the course of time to the rest of the community.
And that's the thrust of my question. I really don't care what the details are with Charter, but 2 years ago, whenever we had a rather strong bipartisan bill, I think it was House File 1319, that Representative Easton and I offered, this was one of the situations that drove us to offer the bill, and it had to do with the ability for the marketplace to respond to marketplace demands, which is high-speed Internet, and here we had a builder who wanted to put basically glass in the ground, fiber optic in the ground to his development, and was running into this roadblock, this little phrase in 238 that was stuck into a bill in the middle of the night in a conference committee in 1984 that prohibits, absolutely prohibits, a locality from striking a different agreement with a competitive provider. And that's what we were trying to get at. In this situation come up, it just struck us that, well, this just ought not to be. This is an artificial barrier to the marketplace and technology advancing, and we were wondering how this was going to be accommodated. And I know we came to MACTA and talked about this, and your support for the bill was surprisingly underwhelming, because one of the things it did was hammered out the whole concept of how peg channels were going to be accommodated. It actually prescribed how competing carriers were going to cooperate in sharing expenses, access, maintenance, and programming, so on and so forth. And it actually did not mandate the communities would have to allow competing carriers. It merely removed the word must and put in the word may. That was the essence of the bill. Because, members, we run into these things all the time. Technology in the marketplace move way faster than people with election certificates, and we're trying to accommodate some things here for the good of the consumers. So we run into these things. So I was just curious as to how you accommodated Rosemount only, or what was going to happen, and this is another one of my questions, given the existing language. Suppose this company decides, oh, you know what, we changed our minds, or they bankrupt their video provider, and now we've got cable in the ground and several hundred subscribers in the subdivision. What's the enforcement mechanism? Will the cable commission take it over? Will they hand the keys to Charter? Or how is this going to work? Is someone going to jail?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you. Representative Beard. Mm-hmm. First, I'd like to clear up a couple of the comments you made in regards to the Rosemount situation. FTTH willingly accepted that franchise. FTTH was given a term that was well in excess of the term of build-out that Charter was given, with the promise that they would provide fiber-to-the-home technology throughout the city of Rosemount. To this date, FTTH, once again, has not built out anywhere outside of the Evermore development, where the home starting price back in 2002 was over $350,000, well above the median home price in the city of Rosemount. This is kind of the point of the build-out requirement that Mr. Leaders and his groups have been talking about, and the fact that it seems this new technology is going to be pretty limited to high-valued homes, not to getting into the lower-valued homes. But once again, that's not the FTTH did agree to build out. Now, what happens, and what we can speculate on what happens to FTTH within the Rosemount area, that will have to be wait to be seen once they have not met their franchise obligation. Now, in the city of Albertville, FTTH was granted a limited area franchise by the city of Albertville using an alternative exception in the state law, which allowed for, which once again, Charter did not challenge. So these accusations that have been made over the past years that cable companies have been litigious in these matters is patently false. The city of Albertville, Charter was serving the entire community. FTTH built another high-valued home development within the city of Albertville, sought a franchise, and was granted a franchise using this exception in the law to only have to serve that one particular community. And they are now providing service in there. Another fact that should be noted with these claims about fiber to the home is that the speeds that they are offering on their fiber-to-the-home architecture don't compete with the speeds that Charter presently offers.
Representative Beard, follow-up?
Thank you, yes. Mr. Tucker and members, there was no contention in my comments that accused the cable companies of being litigious. As I understand the law, as I understand the law, to read, the entire relationship and burden is placed on the local cable commissions, which is kind of where we wanted it to be. It's their job. We wanted them to have the authority to be able to look out for the best interests of their neighbors and their consumers. And if they had some remedy to pursue non-performance, that's what I was trying to ferret out with that question. Along that line, though, apparently there are communities here. I see a list of about 46 of them, and you mentioned a few. The two that I represent are not on that list, obviously. Do you have, like, model contracts for how right-of-way issues are handled and the sharing of utility pole space and facilities, things like that? Because apparently this is being done somewhere. Or are these competing providers in these cities, are they actually cable-to-cable, apples-to-apples, or is there another delivery system being worked with here that gets around the right-of-way issues?
Mr. Leaders?
Unfortunately, the attorneys aren't here with me to answer that question, but from my understanding is that the cable franchises that the incumbent operators have are very similar to the ones, you know, almost identical, because otherwise you'd enter into that legal battle with the incumbent provider. So in most cases, our plan at least was when Wide Open West came to our community, you know, we whited out Charter's name on the cable franchise agreement and presented that to them, and we were basically at the point of negotiations where they had the final contract and they were going to sign it and return it, and that's when the market fell apart, and they said they called us and said they were not going to return the contract and they had to pull back to St. Louis. So,
Mr. Chairman, just a comment on that. Well, in this case, I think the marketplace spoke. Capital is an important part of the marketplace, obviously, and when it spoke and they went away, that's one thing we have to respect. You know, something some of us choke on that would love to see the marketplace unleashed is that word must in Chapter 238, that pesky little word. If that could go away, we would think that the local control could flourish. Mr. Chairman, just my last question for Mr. Leader at this moment has to do with asking you if your association, if you don't want that kind of power, would you be interested in rate regulation power? Since I've been here this year, since we last talked about our house fall last year, Comcast has completed its acquisition of Time Warner in the district that I am elected to represent, and I noticed that three channels disappeared and my rates went up. Not only that, we had just purchased the voice over internet phone thing. Sorry, Andy and the Quest gang, but that was my wife's call. And the total package has even gone up for my broadband internet, telephone, and cable, all wrapped into one. So in a way, service went down, price went up. I got several emails and phone calls wanting to know what the state was going to do about that. Of course, at the moment, we don't do anything about that. Would that be something that your group, Mr. Leaders, would be interested in handling, a local authority to actually negotiate rates and services with cable providers?
Mr. Leaders?
Well, Chair Johnson and the members, you know, historically, we did have the authority to regulate rates, but that was taken away from us almost wholly by the FCC. Back a few years, and then they put together a situation where if your community is served by more than 15% of satellite penetration, you know, if your community has 15% or more of satellite penetration, then you lose the ability to rate or to regulate even the basic cable. So, in the city of Lakeville, for example, Charter notified us that there was 16% of the population now that had satellite penetration, you know, satellites in the community. We verified that, you know, against, you know, our numbers in the community, and it came back that they were accurate in their assumptions, and so we lost our ability to regulate the basic cable as well. So, so historically, I could say yes, we would welcome that, but the logistics of that, I don't know if it's possible or not. We've done it in the past.
All right, very good. Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no other questions from members, we'll move on to the next testifier. I think we have two more testifiers, Mr. Engstrom and Mr. Willett, I think, wanted to say a few words as well. If there's anybody else who wants to testify, please let our committee administrator know. Looks like we are on track to be done shortly after 10 o'clock. If you go ahead and identify yourself the record, Mr. Engstrom, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Engstrom. I'm with Pace, Minnesota. We represent the Minnesota Association of Small Cities here at the legislature. Our organization has about 370 members. They are all mostly rural Minnesota cities, all less than 5,000 in population. All of our members are members of the League of Minnesota Cities. There are three points I would like to make in my testimony here this morning. But first, I'd like to thank the chair for an invitation to join the working group, which will be formed, and we will be submitting our request to be part of that working group as part of the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. First point I'd like to make, and you've heard this just previously here, but loss of local control. In this bill, 2351, we see a loss of local control. Both the federal law and state law governing the operation of video franchises call for a strong role for local governments. City governments are empowered to tailor the kind of service that best fits their community needs. And the services, it's the intention of these laws to provide for wide latitude in addressing those local needs, and that comes in many forms, what the local needs are. For small cities, it means that it can require services to local schools or access to city council and other governmental meetings. It might mean that support for local access workshops so that local community events can be covered and residents are provided with important news and information that they will not get over the large consolidated conglomerates. Cable television enables very small communities, and we represent most of them, small communities that have no weekly newspapers, no television station, and have only automated radio services. Cable allows them to have that local coverage that is so important, so needed. Local control is vital to maintaining local identity and services. Small communities aren't getting it from satellite service, and they aren't getting it from any other medium. They could require it through local mandates in the state and federal law. Second point I'd like to make is losing build-out, and you just heard quite a bit of discussion on that, but build-out is another critical element in the state law. It's an automatic leveler. It levels the playing field. It's truly an extension of local control. Services should be available to every home in the community. Much is said these days about digital divides, lack of service delivery, but here we have a state law. In the state law, the current state law, is a provision which guarantees that competitors must serve the whole community. We're asking that you don't delete that and create a group of haves and have-nots that that's what would happen in our small communities. Third point is there is no need to act at this time. We don't see a need to replace the present system. Small communities can award franchises in a very short time. And until this morning when I heard Mr. Knickerbocker speak, I have not heard of any community where there has been an application for a franchise that has been denied for a competitive franchise. That's the first I've heard of that, of any community being denied. Communities do allow franchises, and they meet certain terms and conditions which are in the state law. One of those is build-out. There are no barriers in the current law, only standards of fairness. There's no restrictions, and no company has been granted exclusivity. What is in the law is an important standard to ensure that every household has a chance to receive services. One of the things that I think and I know that there are some former city council members here, but granting privileges of using the municipal right-of-ways, that's a very, very important privilege. No company could afford to be able to buy the amount of right-of-way that would be needed to provide these services. So granting that right-of-way is the privilege that is the local government privilege. I think that's very important. In exchange for that privilege, it seems to us that building out is a very important criteria, that you require that there be a build-out for an entire community. I don't think that's too huge of a price to pay. Our association feels pretty strongly about this bill and pretty strongly about retaining the ability for local franchises. Be glad to answer any questions.
Members, any questions? All right, very good. Seeing none, we'll move on to, I believe, is our last testimony, Mr. Willett. Thank you for your testimony, sir. If you identify yourself for the record, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Pierre Ouellette with the City of Minneapolis. We had scheduled a couple of our council members to come today. Unfortunately, your hearing was scheduled opposite of the full City Council meeting, so they weren't able to be here today, and they asked me to make some comments, which will be somewhat repetitive of comments made already today. The City of Minneapolis remains opposed to House Bill 2351, and we have many concerns, as outlined pretty much by MACTA. We have a large concern about state versus local franchising and the lack of guidance in the legislation to the PUC for state certification. We're concerned about a possible two-tier system created by this legislation based on the type of company as opposed to the service provided to the customer. We are very concerned about build-outs and the lack of guarantees of service to all parts of our community. We are also concerned about the lack of customer service obligations and lack of remedies for local folks who feel that they have been left out. We're concerned about the ability and cost of the PEG programming and the possible difficulties caused in the legislation for municipalities who have to transmit their programming and their video to a video service provider. Lastly, as mentioned just recently, we're very concerned about the issues of unregulated activities in the right-of-way. I began my career with the City of Minneapolis in the Public Works Department and understand how orderly use of the right-of-way is something that's very important to our cities and needs to be maintained. There was some mention about change and about competition, and I don't think the cities really fear change or competition. However, they feel that the change in competition needs to occur on a level playing field where the interests of the cities and the interests of the residents are protected. Lastly, I'll mention something. A lot of folks over here believe that the City of Minneapolis and St. Paul don't get along, a lot of myth and legend about that. But I'll have this passed out. But every year, the City of Minneapolis and the City of St. Paul get together and name joint legislative priorities, things that both cities believe are important. And I believe it was mentioned by the President of MACTA, but we passed a resolution concerning some major issues for the legislative session, including in those issues of property tax relief, transportation, public safety, and housing redevelopment is the issue of telecommunications. And I'll read what it says. It support municipal franchising authority over anyone providing video services in our right-of-way. Continued support for public education, government PEG program, and support for fair competition while opposing any economic, racial, and other redlining. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is not really for Mr. Ouellette necessarily, but just this issue of the local governments losing controls of the right-of-way has come up many times today. And we don't have to debate it today, but there's nothing in this legislation that takes away the local, a local city's right to say you got to be in our right of way and where you have to be. And so I wish we would just take that issue, along with some others that I've talked about before, off the table and focus on what the real issues are with regard to this policy.
I think Representative Keeson, other members, any questions right now? Hearing none, let me just summarize where things are going to be heading at this point, and then I'm going to renew my motion. There will be another committee meeting or two before session ends. More than likely, we want to get an FCC expert here, someone who can address some of the issues and implications for the state of Minnesota relative to the most recent order on video franchising. Have the opportunity to hear from that and any testifiers who wish to comment further on it. And secondly, we're looking at establishing a couple of working groups or a working group, whatever the case may be, to review some of the major issues around the video franchising, such as what we've heard today around PEG support and franchise fees, build out, consumer protection, and right away. No, I'm just kidding. So that's the plan, and we'll take it from there. With that, I'm going to at this time renew my motion to move House File. What do we have here? 2351 be recommended to pass without recommendation to Labor and Commerce. Is there any discussion at this time? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and that's where the bill is headed. The meeting is adjourned for today. Thank you, everyone, for your attention.